India is digitizing faster than any other country except Indonesia. That's what McKinsey's analysis of 17 mature and emerging economies throws up. But our country's digital story is still in its infancy. India's digital score is low at 32 out of a score of 100. But by 2025, digital could transform India's economy sector by sector, and McKinsey expects we have the potential to be a truly connected nation by 2025. So let's find out Digital India 2025 according to McKinsey. Alok Shirsagar, senior partner at McKinsey, and Anu Madgaonkar, partner at McKinsey Global Institution, join in. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining in. Alok, let me start with you. India's digital economy currently stands at $200 billion, 8% of the GDP. By 2025, what could that number look like?
That number could be north of $1 trillion. And a lot of that value, if you think about percentage of the economy, could be north of 15 to 20% of the economy. And to your point, we're in its infancy, right? We've now got nearly 600 million mobile internet subscribers. They're just starting to use the full power of their phones and the network to consume media, to consume news. But we're now starting to see a whole host of new services come through that. Over half of that, more than 500 billion, is going to come from new sectors. For example, healthcare, agriculture, financial services, transportation. So this is what's exciting. It's actually going to transform all of the economy beyond the IT services sector.
I'm actually surprised you use financial services. We thought fintech was driving the innovation for Digital India.
So fintech has actually done a lot in pockets, for example, in payments, of course, in wallet, and in some parts of online lending. But the real transformation is actually changing the way in which banks themselves interact with customers. So many banks are now using financial technologies, often in partnership with fintechs, to completely change loan approvals, to completely change the way in which customer interactions work. And we see still that in the infancy relative to, say, what you might get in Korea or Singapore.
Anu, this journey from $200 billion of a digital contribution to $1 trillion, what will be the key contributors?
So the composition of the $200 billion is very different from the composition of the $1 trillion. And as Alok said, it's a lot of the so-called real sectors, which till now haven't really experienced digitization through their supply chains, through their interactions with consumers, which will actually kick in. And that process will affect lots of parts of the economy, which till now we haven't actually seen. Whether you think about the movement of goods, right? Movement of goods along roadways and railways. It feels like such a non-digital activity. But part of the $1 trillion, for example, is all of the savings and productivity gains in the logistics sector, which could unlock something like $50 to $70 billion of incremental value add by 2025. Another really important piece of this in financial services is as more and more businesses, large ones, but also millions of small ones, are engaging with consumers and with their own upstream and downstream supply chains through digital information, the use of that data to actually be able to lend to SMEs, to lend to micro vendors, to lend to consumers on the back of data is another very big piece of the $170 billion.
Do you want to put some numbers to the composition of $1 trillion in terms of digital economy?
So the $1 trillion will be roughly half from core digital sectors, where we include IT BPM, which roughly doubles in value from today. And we also include there the whole ecosystem for device manufacturing, because mobile handset manufacturing and other devices, and of course telecom and other digital communication. But the rest of it, which is roughly $450 to $500 billion of value, we see about $100 to $150 billion coming from all sorts of both government-led payments and services that, you know, procurement services, direct benefit transfer types of things that actually save resources. We see labor markets, which is the ability to find jobs on digital platforms, actually bringing a lot more efficient labor into the market. And then we find about $170 billion coming from financial services. We find about $70 billion odd each coming from agriculture, from 50 to 70 billion from retail, from logistics. So each of these sectors is roughly $50 to $60 billion worth. And then financial services, of course, the largest at about $170 billion.
Actually, let me pick on agriculture, healthcare, retail, logistics, because these sectors traditionally have not had technology at the core. So let's talk about each of them in greater detail. Alok, in agriculture, where does digital kick in? Now, that's a very crucial sector. It accounts for, what, 40% of India's labor force?
Actually, it's already transforming the lives of farmers who are deploying this technology. So let me give it to you at each stage. Firstly, the ability to get weather and soil information on your mobile phone is helping farmers to understand where they should plant crops and when they should actually do so, right? The second thing is you're able to now to get precision agriculture inputs, for example, on what type of fertilizer to use, what type of inputs to use, and that's also driven off handheld devices that fertilizer salespeople are actually using in the field today. The third aspect is financial services. So when you now get credit, again, you have people with their handhelds going out into the field and being able to check what has actually happened to crop yields, what's likely to be the pricing pattern, and giving you a working capital loan ahead of time based on what you expect the crop pattern to be. And then, of course, with the link to the mandis, to the rural markets, you're now able to understand where do you get the best price for your produce. When you take that together, the farmers who are doing this today are already achieving 30%+ improvement in yield and about 20 to 30% improvement in price. Right? This is an enormous opportunity to use data, to use handhelds, both for themselves as well as the service providers for them, to transform the way in which they drive productivity. We're seeing that with tractor manufacturers, farm equipment players, who are now providing equipment with sensors on them that are telling you when you should repair them, how you should utilize them more effectively. So you have effectively, exactly to your point, a sector which you wouldn't have regarded as a digital sector, but with the availability of mobile phones, is transforming the way in which information and productivity works to improve their lives.
What about healthcare? India has too few doctors, not enough hospital beds. The government spend on healthcare is what, 1-2% of its overall GDP? It's important that we transform the healthcare sector.
So there is a dramatic transformation of the healthcare sector that's possible and actually unfolding as we speak, on the back of the much wider digital access and reach that we have, including in semi-urban and rural areas. One big manifestation of that is telemedicine. Some of the largest hospital chains are already notching up as many as 10 million remote consultations on a cumulative basis. So that's a staggering number. And if you overlay on this ability to reach a patient and have a specialist doctor talk to a patient in a remote location, if you add to that the digital enablement that an electronic health record offers, which means there is tremendous time saved, you know, when the doctor's actually interviewing you as a patient, they're not sort of going back to the drawing board and trying to ascertain all the facts from you. There's data out there and it becomes a much more efficient process. So all of that can add not just billions of dollars. In the case of healthcare, the value is actually much more than that. It's really about patient experience. It's really about the ability to bring very scarce specialist resources to patients. And it's also, by the way, it will transform the nature of work that a doctor does. Today, micro-studies show that 30 to 40% of a doctor's time is actually spent in very routine activities, which might be just logging basic facts, writing out, you know, prescriptions. If that's digitized, you actually have a lot more productive time released that the doctor can spend on truly improving diagnosis and improving what needs to be done.
Can I just build on that, Anu? I think there's an employment opportunity here too. Because what's now happening, and we're seeing this, by the way, in Andhra Pradesh and Bihar, in various rural parts of the country, is you're enabling healthcare workers. Because now with the combination of specialist support remotely and protocols on your handheld device, you're able to do, for example, maternal care, primary care, with people who are able to effectively follow the protocols without having to go through all of the medical training that you'd have otherwise had to. So you're getting a whole series of new types of jobs occurring, just like we've seen in ride-hailing services for cars or for food delivery.
What about on retail? Because 80% of all retail outlets are currently the mom-and-pop stores.
Sure.
So there is clearly a big opportunity there.
So in retail, you're already seeing the impact of companies who are providing simple, mobile-based, what you might call ERP systems, for the small Kirana store, right? So there are companies who are able to help those stores both manage their own logistics and actually effectively enable them to be a storefront for a whole range of e-commerce that goes through them. So there are companies, for example, that are enabling a small store in a small town, say Tumkur in Karnataka, that has access to 10,000 SKUs that they're able to deliver within 24 hours. So if you're a customer in Tumkur, you go to your trusted Kirana store, you tell the person, because there's a tablet there today, where you can click what you want, just like if you were and I were shopping in Mumbai, and within 24 hours, they're able to deliver that to you. Now, because they have that level of transaction information, they're able to tie up both with the big consumer goods companies to say, hey, I can now give you access that cuts out four layers of distribution direct to the store, and I can tie up with the financial services companies because I can tell you what that store's actual transaction flow is, and as a result of which, you know, get you credit and insurance in a way that you couldn't. It's happening today. So what we're excited about throughout this report is there's nothing here that's futuristic or theoretical. We've taken real life examples. We've worked closely with companies across the sector. There are more than 50 CEOs who've been part of this, several NGOs, several research groups who've worked with us to identify real life examples of the application of digital innovations. And so what we're really talking about is how do you scale this up? And that's what we're most excited about.
So I was just reading the inputs to the research have been provided, what N. Chandra of Tata Sons, Bhavish Agarwal of Ola, Aditya Puri of HDFC Bank, and of course, many others, including Microsoft, UPL, and the entire ambit. And finally, Anu, the fourth sector, which you believe can have a transformative impact on the Indian economy, will be the logistics sector. Currently, it's overburdened. What changes can we expect?
So we're going to see at least 4 to 5 big disruptions in logistics, just to call out a couple. I think the first is this phenomenon of platformization. Just the ability to bring people who want to ship goods and people who have capacity to move goods together on a platform to be able to optimally plan your route, optimally plan timing, optimally plan, you know, therefore the cost, therefore gain efficiencies, and better control over what's actually happening. We're already seeing platforms evolving, which have scaled up to the level of maybe 200 to 250,000 shippers freight operators, and maybe about 10,000 to 15,000 large shippers, right? So when you create a marketplace of this sort, there's a huge amount of cost saving and productive efficiency that you can expect. The second big one is actually telematics. So just like we talked about sensors being deployed on tractors, the equivalent is that when you have IoT-enabled trucks, the ability to know exactly where the shipment is, to help the driver and, you know, manage driver downtime, do predictive maintenance, make sure that there are return trips for every load that goes out, that's already yielding 50 to 70% efficiency benefits in fleets. Which is another very dramatic increase. And
can I just build on one thing here, which is this is not a rising tide that's going to lift all boats, right? There's a huge gap in leadership and execution capability between the leaders and the laggards. We surveyed 600 companies, and you know what we found is almost a 50 to 70% difference between the leader and the median in, for example, the way in which they've actually deployed the technology, the business outcomes they're able to get, the way in which they've actually linked up their salespeople with their supply chain. So anyone who thinks that this is, you know, call it digital and it'll work, it won't. If you're an investor looking at these companies, you should ask hard questions of saying, what real savings are you getting from digital technologies? Don't tell me you've done it. Show me the 30% improvement. Show me the 50% improvement. Show me how you're retraining your people. Show me what new partnerships you're driving. You know, we've one of the big contributors to this that we work closely with was Nandan Nilekani, right? And a lot of that digital ID and the platform that has enabled with India Stack and so on and so forth is creating huge value. But again, you look at top performing companies, both large or small, they're able to get enormous value out of it, where they're counting the 30 to 50% increase. And there's a whole lot of other people who are doing small little pilots and getting lost in what I call pilot purgatory. You know, there's pilots and pilots and pilots and no scale. But those who are actually winning are taking full advantage of these capabilities.
Just to add to that, right, I think what's really exciting is, of course, the innovation bubbling up from small companies and startups is tremendously exciting. But when you look at large incumbent players And when you look at what's getting unleashed when they deploy digital in a very innovative way, I think that's extremely exciting. In a sector like construction, which again you would not think about as digital, imagine the power of actually, and this is happening, right? Digitizing every project site. When a construction company does that, imagine what happens to all the value chains linked to each construction site. Whoever's delivering clinker or sand or stone or the labor crews coming in, everyone has to adapt and actually get onto that digital ecosystem, right? Which drives tremendous benefits throughout then.
You said this is not a blue sky scenario, the estimates that you're putting out. Yet, you know, our digital adoption is very high, but the contribution to the economy is low. So clearly there are challenges that we face.
So I think there are three or four challenges. One is we still need to continue to drive the speed of our infrastructure, right? So, you know, the speeds of even 4G or otherwise is quite varied across the country, and making sure that our telecom infrastructure is able to keep up with the data that's actually being flowing through is remarkably important. The second big challenge is ensuring that we're able to help consumers move from consumption of information and entertainment, this is what they currently do, social media, to now starting to get to productive users, like I talked about with the farmer or the doctor or otherwise. So that's a transition that's going to have to happen in order for the value to get created. And the third is the company one that I talked about. So, you know, there's a lot of talk on digital, but not as much intensive execution. And people who are really saying, how do I embed digital and analytics into every part of my business? It's not a separate thing by the side. How do I embed it? How do I measure outcomes from it? Is the other challenge. And the three are linked, because the more value people, of course, see across all of this, the more investments they're going to make, and therefore actually improve the outcomes for our country as a whole.
In the three stakeholders, you spoke about what the company needs to do. They need to ask hard questions on the kind of gains digital is driving. The other stakeholder in the entire picture is the government. The emphasis of this government has been on Digital India. How would you rate the progress? Because yet, as we speak today, there are still 42,000 villages who are unconnected. 1 lakh, you know, gram panchayats have been connected with optical fiber, but they don't have, you know, commercial services as of now. So it has been a big plank of the government. How would you rate the progress?
The thrust is notable. It's noteworthy that a major thrust has happened, but lots more can be done, right? And we would think that a few of the priority areas to focus on to build on the momentum already that's in place would certainly be around the whole, you know, ensuring that there is a healthy system for continued investment in basic digital infrastructure. I think some of the building blocks or platform elements like digital identification, so the Aadhaar system, the payment system, the payments layer that sits on top of that, the ability to actually store and exchange documents digitally. Many of these building blocks of the stack are already in place, which is good news. I think in addition to maintaining momentum on the investment in digital, it's really about enabling as much innovation as possible in a way that allows consent-based, informed data sharing, that creates things like regulatory sandboxes to allow some of the innovation to actually test and then flourish and scale based on results. Innovation has to lead, and you know, regulation has to go sort of hand in hand or enable it and then catch up with it.
Aadhaar and UPI were two big successes, no doubt. I want you to talk about the employment bit. A digital economy will create 65 million potential jobs. Do you think in the near term there will be a loss of jobs because of a demand mismatch? This is something that we saw even in Industrial Revolution.
The nature of technology is that it changes the nature of work. There's no going away from this. Every wave of new technology has fundamentally asked workers to learn new skills, respond in certain ways, and made some portion of their work redundant. So we are not immune to that in this round of digital sort of technology.
No, but will the demand mismatch be a big hurdle for us to achieve this goal?
I don't think so. I mean, the demand mismatch will be exacerbated if the pace of reskilling and redeployment of workers is slow. So you might have pockets where there's demand for workers who know how to use technology, say on shop floors, or new logistics workers who actually need how to, you know, need to know how to read an app, or the healthcare workers Alok talked about who need to read an app and follow protocols. They need to be trained. They need to find these opportunities. To the extent we actually allow and enable retraining, reskilling, redeployment to happen, the risks of this mismatch and the transition pain will be minimized?
I'll give you a real example. I work with a big manufacturing company, and we're doing a big Internet of Things enablement of their plants. And the people who are the fastest deployers of this new skills are the frontline workers, because they've actually grown up, they're in the early 20s, they've grown up using these devices. So actually we're finding that those people are much more open to retraining. This company is putting real investments behind helping them come up to speed, because they realize that they need a blend, that there's no question that it's going to be a blend of physical people, real people, physical infrastructure with digital enablement. And so companies who are actually spending that time in investments, investing behind this, will have less of a demand mismatch. The other thing I'll emphasize is these are new jobs, right? So if you think about the number of people who drive, an Ola car or Uber car in India today, or you look at what's happening with food delivery or logistics or other things like that, these are incomes that were not even available 5 years ago. Right?
But it's not a new skill. They don't need to learn 3D printing.
I agree with you, but a lot of this is for them learning, by the way, to what Anu was saying, how to manage a truck or logistics using your GPS and the ability to predict when you need maintenance is a different skill, right? Is something that you can learn. And the other aspect of this is we have a lot of software engineers in traditional IT companies who are now actually creating this transformation with the others.
I think the thing I'm most excited about is the real impact it can have on the economy. So your research throws up that increased digital access has begun to bridge the gap between the rich and the poor states.
Absolutely. The pattern of the spatial or geographic pattern of the growth in internet access has been really encouraging. If you look at the last 4 to 5 years, I think we added almost 300 million new internet subscribers, and almost half of these came from states where the average GDP per capita is either, you know, middling or below average, right? So there is a huge thrust. I think UP alone would have added something like 70, 80 million internet users in the last few years, right? So huge increase in access that this whole generation of consumers, you know, obviously non-English based, vernacular, local languages, going forward, voice-based services and apps will have huge appeal here. But it's a whole new segment, and it's a huge segment that's actually coming on stream for many of the agri, health, and other services and products we're talking
and
about.
And education. So as an example, if you look at UP, Bihar, Rajasthan, those are the states that have had the biggest jump. If you look at our digital index at a state level, those are the three that have had almost 100% jump in the last 4 years. And it's people are now starting to consume education, videos, simple apps, right? So you actually have the ability for these new subscribers, these millions of people, to access education, skill, pharma information, healthcare. And this is just starting. It's just starting. And that's why we're seeing the data that's giving us a lot of hope for this.
Alok, Anu, thank you very much for your time. Lots of interesting insights coming in on how India can capture the $1 trillion digital opportunity.